Hello, and welcome to Back Issue Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer.
In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about an older comic book storyline.
In this Back Issue Spotlight, I am joined by James, and we are going to be discussing Loving Capes 1 through 4, published in 2006. He originally self-published this. Loving Capes has since moved to IDW in 2010. So, James, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, and just so you know, I have the IDW trade paperbacks of this.
I actually have the original issues.
Oh, okay.
And we're doing 1 through 4, and there's two reasons for that. One, this was a quarterly book, so we're going to cover the first year of it.
Okay.
And two, the first issue I read was number 4.
Oh, really? Okay. I think I remember you telling me that before.
Now, the reason I did that is that was the free Comic Book Day comic for 2007.
Wow. And I think we're going to go into why that may have worked being an issue number 4, but it's impressive that they used that issue.
Well, think about that. A quarterly book, so you're putting out 4 issues a year, and one of them you're doing as the free Comic Book Day issue. Now, there is an actual number 4 for the full price in case you didn't get it or whatever. But talk about what faith you've got to have in your material to basically say, I'm giving 25% of the issues away for free this year.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, it's not insane. It's actually, he has a lot of belief in what he's doing. And listening to you and Drew view Time and Vine, and you guys went on and on about Tom Zoller, that's when I read that book, of course. And then I started going back and picking up trades like this because I was kind of mesmerized by the guy's work.
I'm a huge fan of Tom. He is, I think, just a terrific writer. And this book is a romantic comedy featuring Mark Spencer, who's an accountant, who's dating Abby Tennyson, a bookstore owner. But, oh wait, Mark is also the Crusader, who's basically a Superman type.
Yep.
And this is all about the romantic comedy aspect of it, with superhero trappings as, I don't say as the window dressing, but it's not about, can Crusader save the day? Because he's the hero, sure he's gonna. It's can he win the girl and can he survive dating life?
Exactly. It's almost like a love story. Let's call that a love story. But, you know, what the people do is in the background. You mm-hmm. see what they do, but it's not the focus of what they do. The relationship's the focus.
Well, it's Mad About You, played by Lois and Clark.
Exactly. Yeah. And so there's a lot of different plays on the Justice League characters and actually some Marvel characters too in here that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I think Tom does a really good job of leveraging archetypes and familiar kind of personas and expectations without the characters feeling like, oh, it's just this guy in another, you know, color costume or something.
I would agree with that. Yeah, and that's kind of tough to do. And you know what's so interesting is Tom, with his own work, is such an amazing writer and so accessible. And then, you know, of course I want to see the other stuff that he writes. And it's just so odd because he does a lot of IDW, like My Little Pony stuff, which is not my wheelhouse, but it's just kind of weird. But I think that pays the bills. But here's what he's really passionate about.
Yeah, and he's done, like you mentioned, Time and Vine.
Yep.
There's Long Distance. There's a few other things he's done over the years. He's done a Star Trek story for one of the IDW comics. Done definitely the My Little Pony stuff. I haven't read any of that.
Yeah, me neither.
But he's got such a great knack for storytelling.
I would agree.
For accessibility.
Probably better than almost anyone else I've ever read.
Around the time this was coming out, I think the 52 comic was coming out.
Okay.
And that was weekly.
I've actually read that. I picked it up and read it.
And this is a quarterly book. And it, for me, it was often easier to pick it up on the next quarter and get right back into the story than it was, maybe not on 52, which was weekly, but certainly on other comics of that era.
Yeah. I think it's amazing right now because we're kind of at a conundrum. You know, the reading base has aged in the comic book community, and so comics, they're making a more in-depth plots and stories that go along, but with that month spacing, our minds are not as young as they used to be, and piecing those stories together, it becomes difficult. So I really appreciate when someone like Tom Zoller can create a book and I can open it up, you know, a week later, a month later, a quarter later, or a year later, and you can jump right in and you know what's going on with, maybe you've forgotten a few details, but it doesn't really matter to the story that you're reading.
Absolutely. I mean, with this, the basic premise is you've got a Superman type, in this case the Crusader, dating, in this case, a bookstore owner versus, you know, Lois, who is a reporter and stuff. Mm-hmm. You've got Charlotte, who's Abby's younger sister who works at her bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
Crusader's the member of the Liberty League, which is Justice League Avengers kind of a thing. Okay, it's the big superhero team. Got it.
Yep.
Easy to understand. But then Paul is also friends with Paul LaCroix, Darkblade.
Darkblade, who's Batman.
Essentially, he's a Batman. World's greatest detective. There's also a few aspects that actually make me think he's a little more Moon Knight than Batman.
Oh, I could see that. And what are those aspects?
When he talked about his origin in one of these issues.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Matter of fact, I think it was maybe issue 3 when he was dating Charlotte the one time.
Yeah. Now that you say it, yeah, that's true. And Batman and, except he's not, he doesn't have the mental issues.
No, he's got the rich playboy, greatest detective part of Batman, but aspects of his origin and his plane almost seem a little more Moon Knight level-like. But that's one of those things where Moon Knight and Batman, at a certain level, fall into the same archetype. There's definitely clear differences between the two characters, but Darkblade falls in that basic area of the Venn diagram of superheroes, if you will.
I would agree with you there, and they're very similar, and it seems like, they play on each other. They're not exactly the same because of copyrights and things like that, but they're close enough that you know who it is.
Well, and you kind of get a feel of what to expect from some of these types.
Exactly.
In Amazonia, one of the other recurring characters, very much a Wonder Woman type.
Yes.
But not one you're going to confuse with Wonder Woman.
Yeah, she's different enough. I mean, she's the big, strong Amazonian female. But yeah, there's differences there. There's some nuances there that make her a little bit different.
She wants to empower females and stuff like that. But again, the way some of that surfaces versus, you know, it's not like you could have these same events happen with Superman, Lois, Batman, and Wonder Woman.
Correct. Because of all the baggage they bring out, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
There's too much baggage. But, I mean, here, you know, he's created characters that we can all kind of relate to without being the character.
Mm-hmm.
You understand where they're coming about. And you kind of understand what their power set is without them having to say it because we've read these characters.
Exactly. And Tom's not going to refrain from putting a couple of, you know, Easter eggs or in-jokes in or whatever. I particularly like the first page of the first issue where we've got the Deco City Times newspaper.
Yeah.
Some of the first column is literally Greek, although it's using Latin, but it's called Greeking, whatever. But then if you read the first full column you can read, it's like, oh, the Crusader was, you know, saving this battleship or whatever. Then you read the next column, and he's like, hey, if you're actually reading this, let me tell you a little about the Crusader.
Yeah.
And then if you read the one that you can only get like about 6 or 7 characters into in the next one, it's like, wow, you're really serious about this reading thing, aren't you?
Like, I didn't think you'd be looking at this.
Hey, to me, that's just, it's fun. He's paying attention to the details, and it's just kind of cool.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking about the beginning of the book, you know, from that first, you know, page, you know, after the first page, you know, you go to the second page where you got the 8 panels there.
Mm-hmm.
You pretty much know everything you need to know on that page about this character likes this character. This character's a superhero. And you even get the feel of the Clark Kent Superman thing within those first, you know, 2 pages. And he does it so quickly and naturally, it doesn't feel jarring. Whereas, you know, that coming across inside of a modern day comic, this probably would have been an issue. Those 2 pages.
Yeah.
An issue of stuff that we would have been like, all right, we're getting the band together. Okay, this is their origin. We don't need all that. He tells us everything we need to know right here. Boom, and I'm in.
Well, and by leveraging the archetypes and such, it makes a certain, I don't want to say shorthand or whatever, but it helps establish the patterns, the tropes and stuff like that early on.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have to do the rocketed from a planet, you know, or whatever Crusader's origin happens to be. And I think we find out briefly at one point, but it's not about that.
Exactly.
Now, the other thing, and it becomes, I think, more, I don't say more obvious later, but more refined, little, I don't say better executed, because I think it's well done here. The way Tom tells the story, he's doing a very grid-like approach to the panels.
Yeah.
Widescreen, so it's very almost like storyboards.
Okay.
So it's very much got that mindset. But typically you'll have a grid of four at the top, a grid of four at the bottom. And it's not the least bit uncommon for those first four to almost be, I don't want to say like a newspaper strip where it's set up, beat, beat, payoff kind of a thing.
It's exactly like that. When I was reading this, did this originally come out as a webcomic or not?
I am not sure.
The only reason why I said that, I got the feeling of a webcomic because it reminded me of, and I kind of put that in my notes on here, it reminded me a little bit, not exactly, of course, of Menage a Trois. I can't say that word. Or Unsacred by Mirka Andolfo, where it's a webcomic and it's written like that. You get one page or like a little blurb like that, and it kind of feeds into the next one, but you don't need to read the next one. You can almost skip it, and they kind of go around. So it felt like it may be a webcomic at one point. I don't know.
It would not surprise me at all if that were the case. I know he has done some webcomic stuff and a few of the others started that way. I don't know if this one in particular did, but it certainly got that feeling. But to me, having that, you know, story beat per page means that by the time you get through like 20 or 24 of these pages, a fair amount has happened.
A lot has happened. They're quite meaty issues. A lot of stuff happens, and the story progresses quickly because with these four issues that we are reviewing, that feels like almost like a year or 2 years worth of modern comic, what's happened.
Well, and it was literally a year of comics at that point for four issues.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's not that many, it's not as crazy amount of pages, but yeah, it just feels so much more, there's more payoff with every page.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's a big complaint right now, and I've had it myself. You get some comics today, and modern comics are good. I'm not going to say they're bad. Some people think they're all bad. They're not. There's great modern comics. But sometimes I'll get a comic, and I'll go through it, and I realize, man, I can read this whole thing in 5 minutes. Whereas this, I cannot read one of these issues in 5 minutes. I'm going to be spending, you know, 30 minutes at least.
Well, and there's also things that happen here that we get some payoff in a couple issues down the line.
Yeah.
You know, it's a world being built here.
Yep, a world being built and yet at the same time accessible.
Yeah, we're exploring the characters, and it's not one where if you miss something on this first page, you'll be lost later. It gives you context, but that context is continually being built up and reinforced.
Yes.
That it's, again, you watch an episode of a sitcom, you get a feel for it. You watch a couple of seasons of it, you really get to know the characters.
Exactly. Yep.
Even if you can't point to, well, that was established in this episode of this season, you know, and whatnot, that stuff doesn't matter. And it's got enough words on the page that things are happening, but not so much that you're like, oh, geez, there's a ton of reading. And it's also, with as much going on, a surprisingly kind of light book, both in terms of lighthearted, you know, it's funny, it's upbeat or whatever, but also it's got a lot going on, but it doesn't weigh you down, if you know.
I know exactly what you mean, because it feels like there's depth to the book. There's a lot going on, a lot happening. It takes you a while to read it if you're reading all the word balloons, and yet at the same time, it's so easy to read. It's bizarre, and he's one of the only writers I've seen who can write like this. There's a few others, but and that's what gave me the indication of maybe a webcomic, because you have to make it very easy to jump in, because typically on a webcomic, if I open up a browser and I pull up the latest webcomic, they're going to show you the latest, you know, piece of work. You know, it might be panel 56 or something, and that kind of catches you, and then you're like, oh, this is pretty clever, and then you go back and read all the other stuff. So if they're not able to catch you on issue 4, for example, on the free comic book day, you don't want to go back and read all that stuff. And issue 1, you know, you look at the, and this is not meant insulting, but you look at blocky characters and people are going to be, oh, maybe this isn't something I want to look at, hard-earned money and stuff like that. But a free comic book issue 4, now people are interested and they want to go back and see issue 1, issue 2, issue 3, because it was that good.
Oh, absolutely. And again, that fourth issue being a free comic book day, that's what got me on the title.
That's really cool. And not many books can do that, I would say.
No. And, well, let's talk about the art style for a minute, because this is a very different art style than you would find, say, in, you know, a Batman or Spider-Man or Superman kind of a book.
Very different.
It is more comic strip style art.
Yes.
And I think it evolves a little over the years. I didn't think to pull out one of the most recent issues or volumes to compare to. But his art style, it doesn't radically change, but like I said, it evolves and stuff. It tells the story. I think the comic strip-like art, in my mind at least, reinforces the sitcom aspect of it.
I would agree.
And it very much bills itself as a, how do they phrase it, like a superhero, superheroic romantic comedy or something?
The heroically
super situation comedy comic book or something like that.
Yeah, it says that on the front of my book. And you know what's weird? This reminds me of Sit Comics, mm-hmm. but different. Okay, so Sit Comics, which he's on our Slack channel, he writes there all the time.
Yeah, Darren.
Darren, but basically, okay, very accessible. You can jump into any issue and you can read it and enjoy it. The characters are, or the payoff is there with every issue. It's very easy to get into. The art style is not photorealistic. It's a little bit, I'd say it's more photorealistic than Love and Capes, but they just feel similar to me. But the thing I would say is he focuses more on the love and Darren focuses more on the superhero aspect.
Yes.
And neither one of them's wrong. It's just, what am I in the mood for tonight?
Well, and I think also a little bit of a different target audience or whatever.
Yeah, I would agree.
Because with Sit Comics, it's like they're going for the younger reader that's really not getting served by most comic companies these days.
I would agree.
You know, the young teenagers and stuff like that. It's got that sensibility. You know, if you've got kids watching Nickelodeon, the Disney Channel, those sorts of things, Sit Comics is right up there with them. And he's got, you know, Ron Frenz and other long-established writers and artists doing the books and stuff. Here, Tom Zoller, I think, is going more for the people watching, again, like I'm Mad About You or other primetime romantic sitcoms.
Exactly. Completely different audiences, and yet a similar feel, which is weird.
Well, yeah, and what gets me is in the course of this first issue, we start by seeing Mark and Abby date.
Yes.
Mark decides to tell Abby he's the Crusader.
And Abby can't keep a secret.
Yeah. Charlotte, her Abby's sister, quickly finds out. That doesn't go well. Abby meets Amazonia. We get that whole potential, is it a love triangle, is it not, sort of a thing. But for me, where we really started to get the payoff is about, I think, on page 21 or whatever. Abby's watching a televised fight that the Crusader is in. He's getting hurt. He's getting worried. And you can feel the emotion.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And if it was one where, oh, it's just a couple of jokes and we hadn't really gotten to know or care about the characters, these scenes at the end wouldn't have the payoff.
Exactly. I agree with you. So, I mean, and it was very heartfelt because she's sitting there and feeling, she's like, oh no, oh no. And you literally are just getting the words from the screen. You're not seeing the, you know, the violence play out, but you feel the emotion at the same time.
Well, and it's funny because while the camera angle is shooting with the sofa on the left and the TV kind of on the right, you know, at that point, I feel if this were televised, we'd almost be shooting from over the shoulder of the TV at her.
I would agree.
But it's still got that very televised cinematic feel to it.
Yeah.
You know? And I really think that you could take pretty much, I think, any issue of Love and Capes or the subsequent miniseries and such and sample whichever issue you find.
Yeah, I would agree. Like, you know, even you saying that, you know, here it is, issue number 2. Mm-hmm. And I flip over there and she's doing that little jump off the building. And right from there, that's all you need to know. Boom, I'm into the story without having known anything that happened before.
Well, and yeah, the way that one starts is she's up on one of the tall buildings in Deco City and stuff. Somebody sees, hey, you shouldn't be up there. Don't jump, kind of a thing. It's like, oh no. You know, because she doesn't want to give away his identity again, you know, but it's a riff on the whole Lois always jumping off of a building sort of, you know, shtick or whatever that happened in the Silver Age.
Exactly. It was really kind of cool. I just, everything I found in here, like, you know, from, it's so slice of life with some superhero stuff, you know, for seasoning. I mean, when she gets fit up at the bookstore, you know, him showing up the Crusader to speak to the kids, you know, at a book signing. Mm. It was really kind of funny watching him trying to be the hero and the kids are wanting to know about the other book. I mean, there's a lot of comedy in here.
Well, and also when he's like, no, I don't want to do it. I hate personal appearances. And you're like, ah, oh, he's just not comfortable. And then when he gets to the point of why.
The real emotional. Yes. That was where I didn't see it coming, because he wants to help people, but there's always something that he's not able to help with.
I mean, there's an aspect where it cuts to the heart. It really has those moments, and not so many that it's like any sort of a downer or whatever, but you really get to like the character of the Crusader because of as much what he can't do as what he can.
Yeah. I would agree. At that moment, you know, you start to really empathize with him and you almost put yourself in his shoes, because, you know, you always wonder, you know, if you had superpowers, how they would work, you know, how you would use them and stuff like that. And you see, you know, the secret identities and why this and why that. But then you see how it can take an emotional toll on the character when people are coming to you and they need your help and literally I can't help you. And that's got to be taxing, you know, because people are going to come to you with their issues if they know you can fix things. But you can't fix everything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and just, again, the fact that it weighs on him. Here's somebody that, you know, you would look at a Superman type, think, well, they've got everything. What could they possibly worry about?
Exactly.
You know, and I thought that was just, a fun aspect. And we sometimes get that in Superman and some of the other comics, but that whole attitude and aspect is something that's just a core part of this title.
Yeah, I would agree. And I really enjoy all the characters that he brings into this, because, like we were saying, you get DC, you know, archetypes there. You get Batman or Moon Knight.
Mm-hmm.
You get Superman. You also get Spider-Man. You get Doctor Strange. You get a lot of these characters who are popping up, and you know who they are, but they're different enough. And just the riffs and jokes that come along with that. And also Abby and her sister, just, you know, the sister's single, trying to set her up. And, you know, trying to set her up with Darkblade, that played out hilarious, I thought.
Well, just when Mark and Paul are in the doctor's office waiting for Mark's appointment.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was, you're never going to see that kind of a scene with Superman and Batman. It just isn't going
to
happen.
Exactly. But we get to see it here almost. So if you were ever wondering, this, you know, maybe how it would play out, but I mean, I'm sure it would be different. It seems like sometimes we don't get to see the real humanity of some of the superheroes that we read about. I mean, some writers write it in there, but it skews to the very, very serious, you know, and not the mundane or funny, things like that.
Well, yeah, and there's an aspect of this where, you know, we could absolutely have a version of this title that's focusing on the in-costume team exploits of the Liberty League and such, and I'm sure it would be awesome.
Yeah.
But this whole scene where the Crusader is you know, going to Doc Karma or Dr. Karma, you know, for some stuff, I enjoyed that a lot more.
Yeah. I did too. I really did. Now, one thing that just to show the comedy in here, I just happened to be in issue 3 and something that popped up to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the witty thing stuff, you know, when he's just setting up, they're setting up the sister with Darkblade the mm-hmm. first time. And she's like, oh my gosh, you know, of all the people, the 50 most attractive. And then Abby speaking to her. And Rich too. Wow, you are lucky. And then she's like turning around to her boyfriend, Mark, the Crusader. He's like, of course, not as lucky as I am, sweetie. He's like, nice save, bookstore girl, you know?
Yeah.
Basically like a bat. Like, what am I, chopped liver?
What I liked was when Charlotte and Abby are going on and on about it, and Mark's like, speaking of new powers, I can turn invisible.
Yeah, exactly. That was hilarious. And then the next page, you see the sister, I can't remember her name right now.
Charlotte, dressed
up as Amazonia, because she's like, I see the types of guys he tends to date. And she looks like, and it made me laugh because you see some of the costume girl characters and, you know, mm-hmm. Marvel and DC, like, girls would not dress like that. It's just funny.
Oh, it's awesome. I like that aspect of it. And they just did some fun bits with not just that aspect of, okay, you know, is Charlotte gonna date Darkblade or not? But, you know, whenever Mark can't figure out, well, geez, I gotta get a gift for Abby, I don't know what to do, I'll go with the world's greatest detective. You know, and there's certain things that are, if these guys worked together as heroes, they would absolutely be doing these sorts of things.
I agree. This is more of the human side, or even though you feel like some writers try to humanize maybe a Batman or a Superman, I don't think they do a good job at it sometimes, because they cut a lot of this out because they're doing these long, drawn out, you know, decompressed stories. And here we're getting so much content and he's building so much in there, and we don't really see those interactions.
Well, earlier in issue 3, they go down to Atlantis or whatever to go hang out with King Mermantis, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
An Aquaman type. I don't think we actually see him, though.
Yeah, we don't.
But when they're down there, Amazonia's there. She's brought a date. It's Major Might. And I'm like, okay, this is clearly a Shazam riff.
Exactly.
But what I loved was how Crusader is like, oh, that guy had to be him. You know, anyone else would have been fine. There's, I don't want to say an inferiority complex, but he's got this, you know, why did the other characters get the movies, the book deals, all this kind of a stuff, you know, I'm the Crusader, what's wrong with me? He doesn't phrase it that way, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And that's where I think I could actually see him thinking that, or saying that, and he's sharing his feelings with Abby, and then about how it played out, you know? Mm-hmm. That was really cool. I mean, it was just awesome, because I don't think we'd see that in a DC comic, you know?
No, and I think the riff they went with and stuff and how Abby handled it was fun. They take things that have comedy potential. But what I love is the comedy is about the situation, not about how ridiculous superheroes can be.
Yes, I would agree. And there's a big difference between that.
Because there have been some TV sitcoms that deal with superheroes and such, but it's always around the ludicrousness of the powers or the costume or something like that. Versus here, all of that is, you know, taken, I don't want to say seriously, whatever, it's a romantic comedy, but that's not the source of the jokes.
No, the source of the jokes is people being people in situations. Like, this could be any other sitcom with the characters not being superpowered.
Mm-hmm.
But what he does is he's able to touch on the superpowerness that's there and just maybe tie it into a normal joke that people would have. You know, just take it up a little a notch. And it's funny without making fun of the tropes. It's not really making fun of the tropes. It's acknowledging that there's tropes, but it's the interactions between people that make things funny.
Well, yeah, when the Crusader's flying around and he sees the Arachnerd the movie billboard.
Yeah.
And then sees it's LaCroix Studio. The next thing we see, he's talking to Darkblade about, it's your company that gave the guy a movie? You know, why don't I get one, sort of a thing?
Exactly.
And then Darkblade brings up, wasn't there that musical a couple of years? Oh, no, wait, it was Crusader on Ice.
Yeah.
And it's like, it gives the banter between the two. It's fun, but it's also one of those things that is making, again, fun of the situation and kind of how, while Superman is like one of the world's greatest heroes, he's not really got the street cred or the respect at times.
Exactly.
And it plays out differently here. And what I loved was some of the payoff later that we get in the next issue on some of how the movie deal happened and a few things like that. It's not just this is a joke and it's not going to go anywhere. Zoller had thought things through. And the fact that we get this billboard here and then next issue, which, you know, a quarter later, three months later, you know, Crusader's seeing the movie.
Yeah.
You know, I love that aspect.
Me too. Because it's so far away, so 3 months later, and yet you can pick it up and you know right where you are, right where you left off. I wouldn't say it's critical that you remember the billboard exactly, you know, from 3 months earlier, but it ties together, and yet you can read and enjoy everything, but you don't need to have every bit of material that you read previously to understand what's going on now.
Yeah, there's nothing about seeing that billboard that if you didn't see it would lessen the next issue at all. Because again, I read that fourth issue having read none of the previous stuff.
Yeah, see, I think he could write a book, Tom Zoller, on accessibility in comics, because I think it's something that we're missing in modern day comics is that accessible piece. Because pick a comic, you know, Avengers and Immortal Hulk, a Batman, you know, when Tom King was on it, or whoever, you pick up the wrong issue and I have no clue what's going on. I have no clue. This character doesn't even seem like the same character I read back when I was a kid. I would be like, what's going on? Makes no sense. And it might turn me off. And it's a lost art.
You have no idea how many times I've gone to Tom when I've seen him at San Diego Comic-Con or C2E2 and basically told him, you have got to write a book on writing comics.
He really does.
I mean, he's, I think, a master at the craft, and does it in a way that just comes across is so effortless. But it's, again, it's clear he's put a lot of time and thought and passion into this project, and he's got a knack for the dialogue. He understands the basic tropes of superheroes and such, and some fun comedic riffs on it without, again, poking fun at us for reading the comics.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm just always amazed. And like I said, I think his art has changed over the years. Not a lot, but slightly, because I read Time and Vine, which mm-hmm. of course came later on. And the art style has changed a little bit, but it's very similar to this. But I left my issues out there. I wish I could see how much it changed over the, you know, 6 years that he did this, or however long he took.
Well, yeah, I think he's certainly evolved as an artist. His storytelling style has always been good, but the specifics of the line work, I think, has evolved a little. And I should have taken the time to take these early issues and compare it to some of the later stuff of this property and his later work. Now, what's interesting is if you look at the cover for issue number 4,
okay,
we've got Abby and the Crusader having, you know, coming out of the movie, you know, or going into it or whatever, talking about, oh yeah, I've met that spider guy.
Yeah.
You notice the other movie poster on the wall?
Oh yeah, what is that?
We've got Arachnid the movie, but next to it we've got Long Distance.
Long Distance. Okay, it's kind of cut off. Long Distance. All right, gotcha.
What puzzled me about that is this comic was the Free Comic Book Day comic for 2007.
Okay.
IDW published Long Distance as a comic book in 2015.
Wow.
I did a little digging. It turns out Long Distance was something Tom had originally done as a sitcom script for the reality show in 2005 of, I think it was Situation Comedy on Bravo.
Ah.
Which, honestly, I'd never heard of, and it took me a while to figure out which reality show he'd done it for, but that's the one I came up with. If anybody has seen it or has a copy, I'd love to watch it. He then did it as a script book and then eventually turned it into a 4-issue miniseries, which I read and loved. And it was one of those that it's about two people who meet in an airport and have a long distance relationship.
And I have not read that one. Is it really good?
I loved it. It was something that had a ton of depth. You got to know both the guy and the girl, how they were doing the relationship, the ups, the downs, their supporting casts, if you will. And it was one of those where I was wondering, you know, can he land the ending on this?
Ah.
And he did.
Well, just so you know, I do have Long Distance. It's stacked up in my trades, and I'm going to move it to the top of my trades so that after I'm done with all the Love and Capes, because I have 4 volumes of it, I'll move on to that. Because I just really enjoy his work.
I love his work, and there's another trade he did a few within the last year or two that I've got sitting around here somewhere. I'm trying to remember what the name of it was.
Not My Little Pony.
No, it was not My Little Pony. Absolutely not. No disrespect to that, but that's not my thing. It was Warning Label.
Oh, yeah. Warning Label.
So I have not read that.
I haven't read it either, and I have that one.
There's another one he did early in the 2000s that might have been even like a sci-fi thing that I've got around here somewhere I need to dig up. But everything I've read of his, I've really enjoyed because it's got a good sensibility. It treats superheroes as heroes.
Yeah.
You know, it treats love stories like love stories. And just the aspect, again, of Mark being a little jealous of how other people get the movies and he doesn't and things like that, it's fun.
It's fun. It doesn't make him, you know, like a belittling. It doesn't make him small. It makes him relatable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's missing a lot of times because we don't get that relatable sometimes with characters that you're reading. And so when you can make him relatable and you can make me understand what he's thinking, because maybe I would think the same thing if I was in that situation, then it becomes really cool because then you personalize the story and then I feel more about the characters and I understand where they're coming from. And if you can feel and understand where they're coming from, you, when the emotional points come, it really hits home. You're like, it's a thump to the chest. Boom.
Absolutely. And there's an aspect of, you know, hey, I remember when the Spider-Man movie came out and what a big deal that was and stuff. And here's kind of a riff on that. And it's like, well, if I were a big superhero, what would I think about that? You know, again, it's not that we're literally in those positions, but we can imagine it.
Exactly. And, you know, like just another thing about how people are. So when Darkblade and I can never remember the sister's name.
Charlotte
are on their date. You know, they're kind of not hitting it off.
Mm-hmm.
But what was really cool is what made them bond was them kind of like making fun of the relationship of the others.
Well, neither of them has anyone to talk about being essentially the confidant of either the Crusader or his girlfriend.
Yes. And that was really cool because like I could see that happening maybe with someone that I wasn't hitting it off with, but we found something in common that we could kind of bond and talk about at the moment where it's not necessarily romantic where I'm not feeling this, but at the same time enjoy each other's company. And I felt that and I was like, that's tough to do because most writers are either going to make them fall in love or, you know, big fist fight. Very few can you say, hey, we're not hitting it off, but here's this little friendly thing we can chit-chat about. And it was so cool.
Mm-hmm.
I just really liked it.
Yeah, I thought that was fun. Likewise, some of the way Amazonia was used throughout the issues, you know, when she did a book signing at Abby's store, how that went.
Yeah.
And just there was a lot of both relationship material and just kind of story fodder there that for what is essentially could be trivialized as, oh, it's again, just it's a Lois and Clark meets Mad About You kind of a thing. But Tom Zoller takes a concept and does such a great execution of it. And it was a good concept.
Yeah.
It's not like we've seen this sort of thing before or really since.
I would agree. Yeah. So I'm just very impressed. And anyone who has not read Tom Zoller, you have to read Tom Zoller. It doesn't matter which one of his books I've read. I've enjoyed all of them and they're all different, but all fun at the same time. So this is more of the superheroes love stories behind the scenes. You know, you go to, I guess he has a sci-fi story. I haven't read that one. You go to Time and Vine. There's basically people who enjoy wine and there's some time travel in there. I mean, just completely different concepts. But at the same time, I may not have something in my wheelhouse like drinking wine and time travel, but it was still real enjoyable. I loved it.
Well, and it was, again, a heartfelt story at its core.
It really was. Yeah, so very impressive.
Yeah, that's again, what I really love about his work is it's got some heart and soul to it, and it's not about the plot, the action, the excitement. It's about the people in the story.
Very much so. And because of that, usually when we review these things, I think we reviewed something over our 2.5 years of doing reviews. He's the type of writer, he usually gets an A or an A plus with me, just because I really enjoy whatever it is I'm reading.
Oh, absolutely. He is, yeah. I think, one of the unsung heroes and stars in the comic industry. And he's also just a really nice guy.
Well, I haven't met him, but he's super nice.
Oh, yeah. I've talked with him numerous times and at San Diego at C2E2 and stuff. And I really enjoy talking with him both about what he's doing, what he's got coming up, you know, what he thinks of what else is going on in the comic industry and stuff or on TV and things like that. I mean, he's definitely a comic book and sci-fi geek like the rest of us.
Yeah. Well, and I'm so amazed that his stuff isn't more popular than what it is because, you know, before you and Drew did the review, I had never heard of the guy, you know, and I read comics. And I bet you there's a lot of people out there who never heard of the guy. And maybe, hopefully, they listen to this and they pick up one of the things and read it because you'll thank yourself for it later on because even if you're on a tight budget, you'd be like, you know, I'm on a tight budget. This is worth getting. It's A-plus material.
Well, at the time, this was a $3.95 comic book, and I think at the time the standard was $2.99, maybe for a DC or Marvel. You got a couple of more pages, but for my money, you got at least 2 or 3 times the amount of story.
I would agree. It takes a while to read each one of these chapters.
And in a fulfilling way, not in a, oh my God, am I ever going to finish kind of a way.
Yeah, no. It didn't feel overbearing. What I mean by that is there's a lot of dialogue between mm-hmm. the characters, but it's not useless dialogue. And you know what I mean by useless dialogue?
Oh, yeah.
Have you read Brian Michael Bendis?
It's not decompressed, but it's one of those that while there's so much to go through, it's still a page turner.
Yeah, I don't mean to pick on Bendis, but, you know, he'll have some pages where I remember Miles Morales, you know, the Spider-Man thing mm-hmm. that he's writing. He would have him and Genki just sitting in a room and just going back and forth about nothing for page after page. And I was like, what am I reading here? And he doesn't really progress the story. It just, he got into a mood to say, this is how young teenagers talk. And whereas here, there's dialogue, but it's fulfilling. And that's this I can read, and I enjoy every word of it.
Yeah. To me, definitely you should check out, I think, absolutely Loving Capes, Time and Vine. Really, anything he's done, I think, is a safe bet. If you're not into My Little Ponies, okay, fine, skip that. That's what I've done. But other
yeah,
than
that,
and if you're into it, let me know how it is. I haven't tried it.
Yeah.
But this is a fun comic. It's a great sitcom take on the superhero genre, focusing on the romantic comedy aspects, not the let's poke fun at the superhero, you know, suits or something like that.
I agree. Yeah, it's really good and worth the read, worth your dime. And by the way, the trades are $19.99 from IDW. And if you buy them from Cowabunga, I think he usually gives you like 35% off on IDW. So it's a lot less expensive than that.
And if you happen to have Kindle Unlimited, the first trade is on Kindle Unlimited, so you can read it for free, or for the price of Kindle Unlimited.
There you go.
Because that's actually what I did, because I was too lazy to go figure out where I've got the original comics, because 2007 was many years ago. It would take a little while to relocate those, so I read it digitally and stuff.
Cool.
I just, the characters are likable. They feel familiar with, in some cases, some very obvious inspirations. But in other characters, they're not just repainted virgins. I'd be hard pressed to name who either Windshear or Golden Torch are based on or exactly which archetypes they're supposed to be.
Exactly. Completely original.
You know, and that's cool. But it's funny because the rest of the Liberty League, I feel like I know, even if we haven't seen a ton of them.
It's weird. You get this comfort feeling. I'm comfortable reading them. I feel like I know the characters, and yet I don't know these characters. It's so weird.
Yeah.
But I love it.
Well, and the quarterly schedule when it was first coming out was basically when you're reading an issue, it's about time to place the pre-order for the next.
Which is perfect.
Exactly. It's like, yep, I definitely want to keep getting it. Put me down for the next. It's not one of those where, geez, I got to go order how many before I see the first?
Yeah. I'm just hoping he blows up one day because he really deserves it. And like you said, I hope he does a how-to book one day, how to write comics, and sells it to the comic writers out there.
God, I hope so, because he's got such a knack for this, both in terms of accessible stories, on likable characters, on, you know, how to get information out there about these characters without ever seeming to do an info dump.
Exactly.
You know, and to do 24 pages every 3 months that has a lot happen in them, and I feel like I can get back into the story on a quarterly basis without missing a beat, that's skill.
A lot of skill. So my hat off to you, Mr. Zoller, and I will read whatever you are writing next.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to his future work and stuff, and like I said, I recommend all of his stuff I've read. I had forgotten that I had Warning Label sitting over there unread, and I do need to go hunt down where I've hidden that other book of his that I had picked up at one point when I had first, back around 2007, kind of discovered his work.
Yeah, I still have two other trades besides the Love and Capes. I read the first trade and have three more of them for the Love and Capes. So good stuff. And I guess this is the longest series he's ever done. Love and Capes, right?
Yeah, I forget how long the original one went for, but then he's done a couple of miniseries afterwards, as one might expect from a romantic sitcom kind of a thing. First they date, then eventually they get married, then eventually they have a kid, that kind of a stuff. So he's definitely had more stories to tell over the years.
And he could probably revisit it if he wanted to.
Oh, absolutely. I think he hit one point where it took him a while to figure out what that next story was. But then when he did, it's like, oh yeah, once he realized what it was, you know, it's like, I should have seen that coming sooner. I'm like, yes, find it sooner and write it sooner.
Yeah. And this is just such great material. I always love it when we review Tom Zoller.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. And like I said, it's easy to go find. It's at IDW. You can get the trades that way. It's on Comixology. It's on Kindle Unlimited. Check it out, and hopefully you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I agree. I hope you enjoy it, too. And one thing for you, John, just FYI, if you like this, I would say a more adult version of something that's similar, not really superheroes, but, you know, the interactions between people, that Menage a Three, it's a webcomic. You can read it for free online. Check it out and see if you like it.
Okay, I'll try to put that on the list.
If you have time. I mean, not a rush, but it's different. It reminds me of the nerd culture stuff, and there's funny interactions between people, and a lot of jokes in there. You know, it's a sitcom, basically.
Well, you've mentioned it a number of times, so it definitely is on the list for me to check out. I haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, we might have to do a review sometime.
We might have to do that.
Hey, by the way, have you been anything good? Did you get anything that you liked in the last shipment?
Let's see, it's been 2 weeks since we've talked.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I was not too keen on either the Catwoman 80th anniversary.
Yeah, me neither.
That issue of Detective. Wonder Woman's not clicking with me too much these days. And the Joker 80th anniversary didn't really do much for me either.
Yeah, there was a couple in there that was okay. But yeah, the 80th anniversary ones have been kind of falling flat for me lately, the last two that came out. I did get Adventure Man, and that one didn't do it for me either.
Really?
It was good, but it wasn't great. And I don't know what it was that didn't click with me. Did you like it?
I liked it. It's basically a Doc Savage riff.
Doc Savage. That's what I've heard. I've never read Doc Savage, so I didn't get the Doc Savage riff.
There's a couple of times DC's done Doc Savage and done pretty well with him, both with the first wave stuff and some other stuff back in, I want to say, the 80s.
Oh, okay.
And all that's right. Almost the extent of my knowledge of Doc Savage. I do have the movie that I want to say Ron Eli was in, the guy who played Tarzan or whatever. Haven't watched it, though.
Yeah, it was weird. For me, it was good. It wasn't great, but I'm not off of it yet. So I'm planning on seeing it through an arc. But it is a meaty issue for the price. It was really good. Did you read Join the Future, the second issue?
I did.
I really enjoyed it. Did you?
I thought it was good. I was hoping it would move a little bit further than it did.
Yeah, it didn't move as quite as far as I thought.
Well, and again, having just read some Tom Zoller stuff where, you know,
it really moved.
In one issue, you move forward. Here, it's like, did we really progress the story more than, say, a day or two?
Yeah, I agree. So it is a little bit slower. And I really enjoyed Sonata still. Are you enjoying that one?
I'm liking that, but I'm at the point where I'm wondering if I'm going to tighten my reading a little bit and if that would make the cut or not. I did like it, though. but it's...
It's just the amount of material and if it can fit in there and if it's good enough.
It's not falling into the essential reading in some cases. I'm loving what Haberlin's doing there, and I think he's doing a great world and stuff. It's just genre-wise enough out of my wheelhouse that as I want to find time to be doing other things, because right now I'm reading everything I'm reading for the week, plus what we're doing for back issue spotlights.
Yeah, that's kind of where you're doing two back issue spotlights, which makes it really hard. By the way, in between the back issue spotlights, I'm doing Why the Last Man book club. Mm-hmm. So I'm reading a trade when you and Sam are recording.
Ah.
So every like off week that I have, I'm actually reading a trade paperback inside of my omnibus of Why the Last Man. And by the way, anyone out there who's listening, if you're not part of our Slack channel, you're really, really missing out. First of all, we have lively debates. They've been going crazy. But then we also have the book clubs listed on there and stuff like that. So you kind of miss out on that stuff if you're just listening to the podcast and not, you know, joining in.
Yeah, there's a ton of discussion. We've had a couple of days where I was thinking, wow, it's been kind of quiet, to the point where one person's like, is everyone okay? And then, like, the next day,
boom,
there was nonstop discussion. I forget if that was when DC announced they were not going with Diamond anymore or what happened. There have been a couple of very lively debates, all in good fun and whatnot. I think people have very different opinions on some stuff based on different backgrounds and different perceptions. But it's fun to be able to talk about it. I wish there was more discussion about what's in the comics than how the comics get to the store. But given the times we're living in, I totally get it. And believe me, I've been participating in those other discussions, too, about the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's like a story will get posted, and then it's kind of like a hand grenade gets lopped, and then boom, boom, boom. But at the end, we all kind of shake hands and, like, no hard feelings, no hard feelings, and everyone kind of goes about their own. And then we all start talking about comics. Then usually Mike Myers jumps in and starts being like, hey, what do you like on your pizza? Or, hey, this was a great comic I read, and everyone changes the topic.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. Yeah. And, you know, I think everybody's got the intent of it being good, even if there are differing opinions. Nobody's taking it or making it personal, which I appreciate.
Yeah, I agree. But overall, it's nice to get new comics. It's nice to have those. It's fun to be in the book club. I enjoy doing these back issue things. So life is good right now, despite all the turmoil in the world.
Yeah, yeah. The other one I enjoyed was Black Cat. That was a lot of fun.
Black Cat was a lot of fun. I enjoy Black Cat because it's almost like you can pick up any issue of Black Cat and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. It's got the done-in-one heist and a bigger story going on.
Exactly. There's a bigger story, but if I just picked up issue number 11, for example, I could just enjoy 11. And you don't have to know what was going on, and you could be okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Which, we need more of that.
We do. We do. I will say I was surprised about Legion of Superheroes number 6 becoming such a hot book so quickly, based predominantly on the appearance of Gold Lantern.
Yeah, I read the issue and I was like, why is this so popular? For me, because they're all new characters. Like, I didn't know who anyone was. And it was just, it wasn't a great issue. I was just like, it's okay. But man, I guess that new character, everyone went crazy.
Yeah, I thought it was a good issue, perfectly fine or whatever. But it's one of those that I expect the value of that to spike and then in a few months probably dwindle back down.
Yeah, is that character never gets revisited.
Even if it gets revisited, is the first appearance of a nebulous Gold Lantern. It's funny because I did a little research on the character online and I was seeing stuff there. It's like, I don't recall seeing any of this in the issue I read.
Oh, really?
You know, what the motivation was, how you could be a Gold Lantern, what the oath was, stuff like that. And I'm like, where does this come from?
Are they just making this up?
maybe it's out of an interview I missed or something like that. I have no idea.
God, because I'm like, I didn't read any of that stuff in there. Anyways, but what is that thing selling for now?
I was hearing 20 or 30 bucks.
Hey, I got a copy if anyone wants one.
To me, it's all about the reading. It's not about the resale stuff.
I honestly get packed away. I've never sold a comic. I've had people take my comics and steal my comics, but I've never actually.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. I went to the military. Remember I told you about
that?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. A younger brother sold a bunch of my comics and took them. And so that was not fun.
I've not had any stolen, at least none that I'm aware of.
Yeah, it wasn't fun.
And I've sold maybe a dozen tops.
Yeah, it's rare. I like to keep them just because they're like memories. When I go back and look at things, it kind of, you know, sparks your memory. I'll be like, oh yeah, I remember that. Oh yeah, just something to jog the memory. And It's just fun to have them.
The ones I sold were to a store out in San Diego that was just starting up. That was owned by one of the coworkers I used to work with when I was working at the other store. And I forget if he had bought out the person who'd bought out that store, exactly what the chain of events was. But he had a store. I liked the guy. I was shopping there. And he had, like, nothing behind the counter of here's some cool books or whatever.
Oh, wow.
And I had an extra set of Death in the Family. I'm trying to think if I had offloaded maybe a Longbow Hunter or a Batman Year One or something like that. Those were the sorts. I had a spare set.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, I think, the extent of what I've sold.
Well, that's really cool. So you have almost everything that you've ever bought.
Other than maybe a few things when I was, like, you know, a young kid getting Laugh Olympics comics or something like that. But yeah, otherwise, totally.
Oh, hey, by the way, the other thing that happened, Denny O'Neil passed away.
Yeah, I heard that. Saw that. That's sad. The guy's impact on Batman in particular, immense.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, you know, I didn't read a lot of DC in the past, so I didn't read a lot of his stuff. Even though he'd written at Marvel, that was way before I was reading comics. But I think Eric sold me some Green Arrow stuff written by him.
Mm-hmm.
And I have it stacked up, ready to read, but I've never read his stuff. But it's kind of cool that I bought that stuff, and I didn't even know he was going to pass, but at least I have something that he wrote that I can go back and read now.
He did some amazing stuff on Green Lantern, Green Arrow back in the day.
Yeah. I think I have a big trade collection that he sold me of that run, Green Lantern, Green Arrow.
When I had first read it, it was, I want to say, in the 80s when DC was doing some double-sized reprint issues.
Yeah.
And they did a 7-issue series of Green Arrow, Green Lantern, or Green Lantern, Green Arrow, whichever it was, with the Hard Traveling Heroes stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And what's funny is it was during the shutdown when Cowabunga was closed down, like everything else in Wisconsin. And he had, you know, Eric's like, hey, check out the store. Here's some stuff you can buy. And I bought some Savage Swords of Conan. And I asked him, I'm like, hey, you have any Omnibuy? I had all of that stuff. But he's like, hey, this is really good if you've never read it. And so I picked it up. And so it's sitting there waiting to be read.
Yeah, again, some of his work was just way ahead of its time, and there was a social relevance to some of it that was just amazing. I had met him a few times over the years at Comic-Con and stuff, and I had even submitted a Batman story at one point.
Wow, that's really cool.
It was, except for the rejection letter I got, I felt had almost nothing to do with the story I was submitting.
I'm sorry, I should have laughed.
I did do a back issue spotlight. I think number 2 is on the Hard Traveling Heroes stuff.
Cool.
So that's worth checking out. But yeah, his influence, Denny O'Neil's influence on Batman over the years as an editor and stuff like that just shaped it for a really long time.
Yeah. You know what's sad is we're getting to that time where all these guys who wrote back in the, you know, 60s, 70s, they're getting up there in age because, you know, some of them were not spring chickens, right? You know, they weren't teenagers back then. And so it feels like we're going to have a lot more people passing away, you know, the icons of the industry.
Well, we've already lost most of the golden age creators. There's still a few around.
Yep.
We're now getting to where we're losing more and more of kind of the silver age. And I would say we're now also getting to the point where some of the Bronze Age and more modern ones, we're starting to lose them, and we're going to hit a point probably in another decade or so where a ton of the people I grew up reading are just not with us anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, but I mean, it happens to all of us, but it, just losing the icons and the people that you've heard of, you know, even though I never read him that much, or I hadn't read him at all, I knew who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just kind of amazing. You know, we lost Stan Lee. We lose people that everyone knows. So it's a sad time, but we're thankful for the work he left us.
Absolutely. And hope his family and friends are doing
well. Yeah, hope so.
So anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool.
So one quick programming note on the Comic Book Page podcast. Comics are coming back out. I'm getting, I don't know, about 15 or so a week, thereabouts, maybe a little more, a little less, depending on the week. But we're still at the point where, for a little while longer, Marvel's not shipping every week. There's going to be a week. DC is dark. So I'm going to stay with the back issue spotlight format for the foreseeable future. I haven't had anybody say, oh, you've got to go back to the weekly comic spotlight format. But what I want to do is kind of, I don't want to say compromise, but try to get the best of both worlds. So what the plan is to introduce the monthly comics spotlight is kind of that middle ground. We'll keep doing back issue spotlights either every week or almost every week. And the idea being one of the first weeks of the month, starting in August, James and I will talk about what we read during July, what the highlights were, what we thought of it, and kind of do that general discussion stuff that we've been doing at the end of those back issue spotlights that James and I have been recording as that monthly comics spotlight. Now, what I'd like to do is open that up a little bit to you all, the listeners. If you've got questions about some of the comics, say, that came out in July, or, you know, want to know what we thought about it, or something of that sort, we'll be recording those episodes, obviously, after we've had time to read the comics for that month. And it's not going to be, it's kind of a middle ground between what the weekly comic spotlight was. We may go a little in depth on a couple of comics. We may just talk at a high level and stuff, like we did when we talked about what we were getting from Marvel, DC, and the other publishers. And leaning a little more towards, but not too much towards, like the yearly comic spotlight of, you know, what were the highlights of the month? What was the stuff that caught our attention? Now, I haven't fully worked out the format of these episodes, and that's why I'm mentioning them now. If there are things you would like to see in that kind of a monthly recap of what we had read the previous month, let us know. Help us shape what these episodes look like. Because I do want to cover what's coming out new, but I think it's going to be a while before it makes sense, if ever, to really go back to the weekly comic spotlight format we had, just because of some of the changes in the industry, in terms of the slow roll on a couple of things, and the changing reading habits for James and myself. So once again, we're planning on introducing the monthly comics spotlight in August, starting with an episode that covers the July comics. So what that means is when James and I record the Morning Glories episode in 2 weeks, we're going to cover what came out at the end of June, on the June 17th, June 24th stuff, kind of like we'd been doing the last couple of episodes when James and I record. And then starting in the beginning of August, we'll do again a monthly episode. It'll probably replace the Monday back issue spotlight for that first week. I don't know. I haven't worked all that out. But again, this is your chance to weigh in. So let us know what you would like to see, if you like the idea of the monthly comics spotlight, and if there are things in particular at any given month that you would like us to include in that discussion. The idea is it'd be somewhere between, you know, a half hour, 45 minutes to an hour discussion, depending how much we've got to say about what came out that month. So hopefully you all are continuing to enjoy the back issue spotlight format, and hopefully this kind of fills the gap a little for what's been missing since we haven't been doing the weekly comics spotlight. So please, if you've got comments, thoughts, suggestions on this kind of programming note and stuff, you've got my email address, jkm@comicbookpage.com. I'm easy to reach on Slack. I'm on the forum. Basically, there are multiple ways to get in touch. Let us know what you think, and we'll go from there. And a quick reminder that the deadline for the preview spotlight number 152 covering the July 2020 previews is the morning of Saturday, July 4th. And yes, that is obviously the 4th of July, but it's also long before the fireworks begin that evening. The deadline bright and early that morning. I'm going to be spending the day compiling that episode. We've got an open submission policy for the preview spotlight episodes, and I encourage you to send in clips to support the comics joy. Obviously, the comic industry is undergoing some turmoil these days, so it's a great time to support the comics, enjoy, and convince other people to go check them out. Now, if you'd like to get email reminders for these preview spotlight deadlines, there's a place to join our mailing list on the main page of the Comic Book Page website, and I send out a reminder the day previews is released, that Wednesday, another one the Wednesday afterwards, which is a couple of days before that Saturday deadline. Sometimes I do it on the Tuesday, the Thursday, depends, but I try to do it on those Wednesdays, and it's an easy way to get those reminders. So once again, it's a great way to support the comics you enjoy. Now, with DC moving to their other distributors and stuff, we're not excluding DC. You can send in clips for those. Just make sure we've got whatever information you have, if you've got an order code or a page number in the DC Connect or whatever, that's helpful. For items in previews, please, when you send in the files, include not only the title, but either the issue number or if it's the trade paperback and stuff, just so I can correctly identify the stuff in the show notes. That way, if people say, you know what, somebody said something about this, they can look at the show notes and it helps them order the item, because the whole point here is to share our love of comics, support the comics we enjoy. It's a competitive market out there at all times, particularly now, and doing what we can to support the creators, the publishers, and so forth, and just share our love of comics. That's what the whole thing's all about. So once again, the deadline for preview spotlight number 152 is the morning of Saturday, July 4th, 2020. And a quick reminder that we've also got the recommendation roundtable episodes going. The point of those episodes is to help people find other ways to spend their time. So send in pics of comic books, either older ones, back issues, trades, whatever, novels, television shows, movies, video games, if there's a board game you think people might really enjoy or something. Let's get that out there. We've got a lot of ways we can spend our time in helping people find things that they might be interested in. It's just a great thing to do. I've gotten a lot of clips from Billy Hogan. I want to thank him for that. It reminded me that I should really go reread Astro City and put a few other things kind of back on my radar, including a couple of novels he recommended. I've added those to my reading list. We'll see when I get to them. But we've got no deadline for these episodes. The way these episodes work is you send in one clip per pick, and that could be a particular book or video game or TV show, or it could be a series of books, anything that's kind of a unified thing. And when I get enough of those clips, I'll string them together, I'll kick out an episode. So that means if I get tons of clips, like when Billy sent me about, I don't know, an hour and 45 minutes of some great clips, that was enough for me to get two episodes put together, about an hour for one and about 45 minutes or so for the other. So that's what episodes 2 and 3 are. But if I don't get clips, it may be a while before that next episode comes out. And the reason I'm doing this is there are a lot of things hitting, like the streaming services and stuff like that, on not really a set cadence like we've got for the preview spotlight. So if you wake up one morning and say, you know what, there's a bunch of stuff I think people might enjoy, spend a few minutes, send in the clips, they get in the queue. And if it's another few months before you do the next one, that's great. But hopefully we have enough people sending in clips on a regular enough basis that we can be putting one of these episodes out every month, every other month, or something like that. So once again, the point here is just to recommend older comic books, novels, television shows, movies, video games, or anything else that doesn't really fit the format of the preview spotlight, but that you really want to kind of share your love of and encourage other people to check out. So once again, there's no deadline on those recommendation roundtable clips. It's an open invitation for everybody at all times. So please send in clips when you've got something you're thinking about and share the love. Join us next week when Sam and I finish up our look at Secret Wars, covering issues 9 through 12. And then in 2 weeks, when James and I talk about Morning Glories number 1 through 6 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.